We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Underworld Stack Fest, brought to you by Player Profiler here at rotogrinders.com. That's a mouthful. That's a lot of, we got a lot of names going on in the show.
A lot of long words too, several syllables to put together. Yes,
exactly. I am your host, Eric Binefor. I'm joined this week just myself. We're tag teaming week five here, myself and Dario. Austin Matt could not be with us. He is probably off celebrating from the fact that we had maybe our most successful kind of show. If you set aside what I said about TJ Hawkinson, you probably could have just printed a whole bunch of money with everything that we touched on last week. And it wasn't like super profound stuff, but I think it is important to really quickly go back over kind of last week and just say, like, we're starting to get to the point. This is how I feel. I'm wondering if you feel this way, Dario. I'm starting to get to the point where, of course, we don't know everything. Frankly, we still probably don't know very much. But we're starting to pick up some kind of team-level trends, league-level trends, and some things we can sink our teeth into a little bit more and feel really good about, like, in every single, you know, matchup, kind of what the Lions are going to do, right? What the Bucks are going to do. We're going to talk about some of these teams. What the Falcons on the opposite end of the spectrum from those two. What are the Falcons going to do? You know, come out and run the ball 14 times in a row in one of the highest total games of the week. And so I think we're at least getting, you know, not necessarily to have we solved world hunger, of course not, but I think we're getting to the point where we're starting to at least understand some of those things that can, you know, like, you know, weeks one and week two, we don't know what to think, really. And I think we have a little bit better idea of that right now.
Yeah, definitely. A four-game sample, I mean, you know, it's huge compared to when we were talking about week one and knew absolutely nothing, or week two and we just had one game to go off of. But like you said, I think that there's a lot that is still changing. And, you know, I think like the broadcasters keep talking about how, oh, none of these teams played in the preseason. September is like a warm up for them. And we've already seen so many injuries. I mean, we've got Andy Dalton and Teddy Bridgewater starting games. Kenny Pickett's already taken over the starting job. Bailey Zappe is on the main slate this week. Like,
it's simultaneously we have the rookies. Kenny Pickett's pretty old. He probably could have played a many years ago. Kenny Pickett and Bailey Zappe, right, on one hand, and then we're still trotting out Andy Dalton and Teddy Bridgewater on the other hand. It's right. Wild how this season's coming together.
Yeah, no, and the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo is already fully in, like, it's just been, yeah. I think we talked about this last week where it's like, oh man, it's week four and we're already talking about these nobodies, and it's it got way worse this week. So
it did.
Yeah. We're gonna like really have to, I feel like you have to dig really deep to just find anything interesting or appealing on this slate.
Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. Yeah, that's 100%. So you mentioned kind of, you know, oh my gosh, I can't believe. And that's what we were talking about with like Josh Reynolds. You know, last week Matt wouldn't shut up about Josh Reynolds. And, you know, that was right and certainly turned out to be even more right when DJ Chark mm-hmm. was out on Sunday. But, you know, I made kind of the joke, like you mentioned, like, oh my God, are we okay? I got it. Josh Reynolds, good play. Can we like, let's not spend 15 minutes on a week four show talking about Josh Reynolds. And now we're in week five. And I agree. It's not only worse from like an injury perspective, they're just, it's some of it has to do with the teams that are not on the slate, right? Mm-hmm. When you remove some good teams, although the two that played last night, I'm kind of happy that they're not on the slate, but when you remove the Chiefs and Raiders and all that, it does obviously get a little hairy. But that being said, it's kind of like the league is a little bit of a disaster right now. Mm-hmm. You kind of have the haves and the have-nots, right? The Eagles, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. The Eagles are kind of just like this wash, rinse, repeat every single week. Like, we don't even, like, we're going to talk about them, especially mm-hmm. this week in their matchup. But you just kind of have, like, the Eagles, okay, yep, you can play them every week. The Bills, okay, yep, you can play them every week. And then you have the Bears. Maybe even, you know, the Falcons, who we've been kind of interested in for a while. It's like, it's not that they can't have good games. It's just that, you know, like I said, it's kind of the haves and the have nots. And you're just not going to get those like slate breaking performances really from some teams just because of how they're, you know, how they're, whether it's their coach or whatever, how they're wired to play the games. And so that creates difficult DFS slates, particularly when you start to remove the Chiefs and you remove those other, like, there's not a lot we can sink our teeth into. And so that makes for both, in my opinion, both like tough but kind of fun DFS slates, because we do have to dig, right? The Josh Reynolds would have been like a lock button today on this slate, whereas last week I thought it was a little more wide open. I think it kind of makes like digging into the stuff like we're going to do today a little more valuable.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, yeah, once DJ Chark was ruled out on Sunday, it was like completely wheels up for Reynolds and Hawkinson, and they totally paid it off. So I think, you know, the Lions this week, they're in New England, much different game environment than hosting the Seahawks. But that's not even one of the five games we want to highlight today. So do you want to start us off with the Eagles and the Cardinals?
Eagles, Cardinals, I think we've joked almost every week now that both of these, probably the Eagles are going to be on here because the Eagles are one of the true reliable teams that that are going to pass. They have a dual threat quarterback. They have a fairly condensed target tree, right? They have everything we want for DFS, and they're going to score a lot of points every single week. They happen to align this week with the team that we also joke about, whoever they're playing, we want guys against, mm-hmm. against the Cardinals. That we talked for a half hour in the week one show about the Chiefs. And frankly, that was the only game that the Chiefs have really looked truly awesome on offense all year. And it was against this Arizona Cardinals team. The game is also in Arizona, so we have no, you know, weather concerns. And I believe it's the highest total of the slate.
Yeah, of the main slate for sure.
Yeah, of the main slate. The thing I really want to kind of get your two main things that I'm struggling with this game is A, how easily do you think we can spend up for Jalen Hurts in on this slate when we'll get to some of these other quarterbacks that exist that are not maybe amazing, but they're like more than $2,000 worth of savings on DraftKings mm-hmm. from Jalen Hurts. And then how are you going about attacking that Eagles pass game where it is, we're kind of ping ponging game. Dallas Goedert's just kind of like putting up 12 points every week, but we're kind of ping ponging games between AJ Brown and Devonta Smith. And then we got the Miles Sanders game. Shout out to Miles Sanders, by the way. I played him every single week for the first 3 weeks. And then in week four, when I pivot off, that's when we get the explosion game. But, you know, they're kind of ping ponging around the Eagles, guys. Do you have like a kind of a lean into how you want to attack them?
I think that it's been interesting to see the Cardinals, like Byron Murphy has done a really good job shutting out. First, it was Devontae Adams, and then Cooper Kupp had just about his worst game in fantasy that we've seen in the last like year plus. So they have somehow been able to keep number one receivers a little bit quiet recently these last couple weeks. But I do think like the target share that AJ Brown has seen so far this year is completely insane. Like I think he's at a 33% target share on the season, and you just can't fade that. I think you have to you have to play him. He's going to get his 8 or 9 targets, and he's such a monster after the catch. Like you have to spend up for him in a good chunk of your Hurts lineups. And I think the conversation is whether you pivot or like you include Smith or Goddard as like the secondary item or the secondary sack. And then, you know, I think there's a good argument, as Matt has laid out, for just single stacking Hurts, like using those other spots in your lineup for getting exposure to other games. Because if Hurts rushes for, you know, multiple touchdowns in a game, which he's very capable of doing, he's not going to bring the whole offense with him. So I think definitely you start with AJ Brown. And I think Devontae Smith is kind of my clear second over Goddard, because he's been separating from Goddard in terms of targets as well. Like I think he's closer to 22% and Goddard's been around 17% target share, which is not a disparity that I think we expected to be quite that steep going into the season.
Yeah, I have found Dallas Goddard's like maybe low-key one of my kind of favorite tight ends in the NFL. Just always been really good, really efficient, you know. And then we got Zach Ertz out of there, and it was like that was an amazing little stretch run that he had at the end of last year. But I have found it kind of interesting that it has felt kind of like a two-man show between AJ and Devonta. And Devonta Smith's been a little bit more kind of hit or miss. But when he hit, when he's hitting, you know, he is hitting big time. And I think for subscribers and I guess for non-subscribers, I have tagged Devonta Smith in lineup HQ for this week, because I think he kind of comes at this price that is both difficult and awesome for tournaments, if that makes sense. Yeah. It's tough to get him to project well, right? Because, you know what, give him 7 or 8 targets or something like that, and it's like, for $6,000 on DraftKings, there's other dudes. I mean, we're going to get to some of them. There's other guys that are just going to project better based on, you know, any inputs you put into a model or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's on the stack that we want. It's a little more affordable way to get access to that stack. And he has just as much upside as anybody. I mean, we saw it. They're even throwing him, you know, he's not just a down the field player either. I know he's skinny little guy, but he won the Heisman. They're throwing him jump balls in the end zone too.
Yeah.
He's just really good at the game. And so he's probably my favorite play from this slate, but I will just mention the, like if Goddard caught 2 touchdowns in any game, he's probably going to do it at some point in this game. If somebody can make the Eagles keep their foot on the gas for one, just once, please, someone, I would like to see what happens. And tight end is so bad this week, like so absolutely horrible this week, that I think more than a normal week, I think I do like Goddard. Anything else on the Eagles side? And then let's talk about the Cardinals, because the Eagles are fun to talk about. It's the 3 or 4 guys, and we're excited to play all of them. How the heck do I run this back? Do I run this back on the Cardinals? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess one last thing with the Eagles, right, is last week we talked about Boston Scott's injury being like a good reason to be wheels up on Miles Sanders, good and that rib call. Injury still has him questionable. Like, I think game time decision probably for Boston Scott, right? He hasn't been ruled out yet today, as far as I know.
I haven't seen him.
So definitely keep an eye on that, because I think playing Miles Sanders, I think he got to like, I want to say it was 20 some carries last week, 27 carries. So, you know, even if he get any game, he gets to 20, you want to have him in your lineup. And another week without Boston Scott could be another big Miles Sanders week. And we, you know, we've hit on how good the Eagles defense is. And if there's any type of scenario where they do choke out Cliff Kingsbury and his, you know, Cardinals offense, it could be another big game for the running game, which is, of course, Miles Sanders. The way he's taken over there is, I think, something that, again, was unclear preseason that sort of like found its way into clarity.
I can't play him now. I'm just going to be totally honest. I think everything you said is brilliant. I think he's a really good play. I've liked it almost every single freaking week, is Miles Sanders Eagles defense, because like, and it's so funny because he's like almost kind of hit in a couple of the games and been okay in a couple of the games. Mm-hmm. And I think he had one bad game. And then last week, just how it goes sometimes with the slate dynamics, you don't have it. And then he has his absolutely monster game. So for the sake of the listeners who I agree with that comment, Miles is a pretty awesome pivot off of what should be some pretty big chalk at running back. I won't play him so you guys can reap the benefits, because when I play him, you get the 9-point game and you guys can have the 30-point game. What about the Cardinals?
How generous. Yeah,
exactly. What about the Cardinals? I've seen some people talk again about the tight end thing with Zach Ertz, mm-hmm. and then Hollywood Brown. Can we do it? Rondale looks, Cliff said earlier today, he's a game time decision again. Oh, they just seem kind of like a mess. Is it just Hollywood and Ertz, or am I missing something?
Yeah, I mean, Rondale, I was looking at the usage last week and I was surprised to see he came in and immediately got, I think it was about 16% mm-hmm. of the targets. So that's like pretty solid. I didn't realize I don't think I had caught that he was questionable still.
I just saw it like an hour, maybe an hour ago. So I don't know. Him and Dortch, yeah. Who knows? That's a Sunday thing probably.
Yeah, and it's always a little scary with the Eagles cornerbacks. Again, we saw that. We've seen them shut out Justin Jefferson. Like, the Commanders receivers pretty much did nothing in that game, and we've seen them be really good in other games. So I think that definitely Hollywood and Ertz are your primary plays. And I think that, you know, the tight end situation this week has definitely been one of the narratives of the slate in terms of how I've thought about it. Cause you always have like that debate of, oh, do I spend up for Andrews or Kelsey here versus everyone else? And this week we don't have a choice. It's like, pick your poison among everyone else. Like, you're mm-hmm. going to get anywhere from like half a point to 11. So yeah,
right. If you get like, just please score a touchdown. Like, I don't care who I'm playing, get in the end zone and you're probably good this week, honestly.
Yeah, totally. So I think that Ertz, like, Kyler's been looking his way a ton, and Kyler Murray, I think, had his most accurate game in week 4, if I'm not mistaken. So things are potentially looking up for the Cardinals offense. I think that Hollywood Brown and Zach Ertz are definitely the way you want to approach it. I think that there's just like still, especially on DraftKings, there's probably other values at tight end. I think we'd mm-hmm. rather play Goddard for $100 less than play Ertz if we're even already talking about this game. And like Tyler Conklin's $1,000 cheaper. So I think that Ertz is a little bit tougher to stomach just based on the tight end landscape. But I like those two as like the main run backs in that game stack.
Yeah, this is something that I struggle with, admittedly, being more of like a single entry, 3-entry max player. I'm trying to, a decent crux of my strategy, right, when you're playing smaller field stuff, is to kind of limit the amount of things I need to get right. I don't need to hit the stone cold nuts like last week, which had like every Seahawk mm-hmm. and Lion basically, you know, all in the same lineup with Austin Eckler, you know, who bounced back with the touchdowns and everything. I don't need to hit that to win the tournaments that I'm primarily focused on. And so I this show is perfect because I'm always kind of looking for, how do I stack around a game? Give me one or two things I need to get right on the slate, right? Give me this game. Let's just use the Eagles, Cardinals, and maybe one other game with like a secondary correlation, like we constantly talk about with like the Lions or whatever. And like, boom, I'm done. You know, I'm if that hits, I'm alive to win. The Cardinals are so difficult when it's not like clear cut for Hollywood. Like, we've had a couple spots where I have played Hollywood. He made a lot of sense. You get into this, like you outlined, Justin Jefferson couldn't perform against the Eagles, right? They're shutting dudes down. They're shutting everybody down, honestly. You might get a little garbage time here or there, but it's been really difficult for opposing offenses against the Eagles, which makes it tougher for me, which is probably why I keep screwing up this Miles Sanders Eagles defense thing, because it's like, well, if nobody on the Cardinals projects well, I don't expect them to have any form of success. Yes, I like the Hurts stacks, of course, who doesn't? But it almost leads to just another Miles Sanders script, which is an Eagles defense script. And so I struggle I definitely struggle with this game. It's very appealing. It's the highest total. I love the Eagles, but out of all the games, it's actually the one I struggle with the most, I think, ironically, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah, I think this is a perfect example of why this slate is like especially gross and confusing. It's like the game that should be the best on paper still has like a very good chance of this outcome that is a complete dud for DFS. Like, I'm looking at Kyler Murray's player page right now, and it's like, you don't see Kyler Murray projected for this low of ownership very often. He has the upside that we like to see, but it's like Eagles defense, man. That's terrifying stuff. So I don't think I'll even be playing any Kyler lineups, even though it looks like it might be wise on paper. It's just like,
yep,
this Eagles defense between the front seven and their, you know, their secondary, it's just like no one's been able to get anything going on them.
I don't know. We'll move on here to the next game. When are the Eagles going to lose?
Look at their schedule. Yeah.
They might go undefeated. I'm not trying to totally overreact to 1 month of football, but I don't really see a game. They don't have anybody in the division. I mean, unless Dak comes back and the Cowboys somehow, you know,
their next sneak five something games out. They're playing at the Cardinals, and then they get the Cowboys at home, Steelers at home, at the Texans, Commanders at home, at the Colts, Packers at home. That could be, they could be 10-0 or 11-0 going into this Packers game. Yeah, it's, you know, they do seem like such a dominant, like they're just head and shoulders above the rest of the NFC right now.
Oh, yeah.
Do you agree?
Yes, 100%. It's not even close. So two teams that are in this weird range of the AFC, which is definitely a much more loaded conference, kind of as you mentioned, the Chargers go to Cleveland to play the Browns. And it's another one of these weird freaking Browns games that have, like, kind of like last week. I don't want to compare the Chargers to the Falcons, but last week we had a fairly high total, some appealing fantasy plays. You can understand why guys on the Chargers, guys on the Browns in both the matchups with the total, et cetera, all look good for DFS. And then you were mentioning kind of something before the show, which is exactly what played out in the Falcons and Browns game last week, where it's like, look, Amari looks good, Njoku looks good, you know, London looks good, Pitts looks good. And then both of these coaches just said, F this, we're running the football.
Yep.
And like the Falcons won the game, absolutely win the game with 14 straight runs in the second half. And there's clips of Arthur Smith at halftime are coming out to the second half, like, you know, getting all the old school boomer, getting his guys fired up. We're about to run the F out of the ball. You know, we're going to run the ball. We're going to run the ball, blah, blah, blah. And like just old school type stuff. And that's what I get concerned with, kind of like we talked about with the haves and have nots. I really like both these offenses. This is not the same game as the Falcons, because I do expect the Chargers to kind of attack the Browns secondary a little bit more. But would I be surprised if this was kind of another dud game, even though both offenses look good? I wouldn't be surprised. So tell me how the heck to come at this one, which is what, the second highest total. So, you know, we're on to the top two totals of the week, and I'm still feeling kind of shaky.
Yeah, no, I think that like you pointed out, the key difference between this game and last week's Browns game is the Chargers, their run game is actually their short passing game, right? Like, yeah. Joe Lombardi, very pass heavy. Justin Herbert, even though he's been playing through his rib injury, leads the league in passing yards through 4 weeks. So like that's pretty remarkable. They're number five in team pass plays per game, number three in pace of play. So I think that this is just another game where I expect I think Myles Garrett been ruled out? I know
he's back, but Clowney is not. Well, Clowney's not ruled out yet, but I believe Myles Garrett is not on the injury report.
Okay. But this Browns pass rush is not fully healthy. And Justin Herbert, I think he's got another week to recover from the rib injury. And I think he might be a sneaky good play. I actually put this out in the Roto Underworld newsletter, is like, he looked mostly like himself last week. It was, we had one really bad game coming, you know, 10 days after the rib injury. Now it's been a full, what, 2.5 weeks, because it was on a Thursday night game in week two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that there's a chance we see, like, you know, the Justin Herbert we know and love in this game, and at fairly low ownership. So I think that this could be a potentially huge game for the Chargers offense. And Keenan Allen is still not trending to play this week, right? So another concentrated target share toward Mike Williams. I think Gerald Everett had like a midweek injury too, that is not looking very optimistic, right?
Right. I believe that's correct. I'm trying to look all these up on the fly. Of course, we do this show like kind of when all the news is literally like,
I know,
coming out. So you're trying to stay on top of everything. I can't confirm the Gerald Everett, but obviously, yeah, Keenan is struggling. And I do want to just piggyback. I actually played in my main team. I played a Charger stack, which hilariously worked out, and I was still had absolutely zero chance of making any money because I didn't have, you know, the Hawkinsons of the world and such. But I totally agree. And now it was the Texans, but I thought Herbert looked awesome. I thought Mike Williams looked awesome. Mike Williams was kind of dominating targets. Josh Palmer, that's what I wanted to ask about. He got hurt last week. I don't know what the latest is on him. Yeah, so anyway,
looks like he was limited on Wednesday and Thursday. Okay. And I mean, they're, you know, the West Coast teams, we don't get the injury reports until later on Friday. So I'm not sure
just probably say is monitoring this whole situation, because it's going to kind of get lost in the shuffle over what tends to happen, right? Is we get the news like now Thursday and Friday that like shakes up the slate, and everybody's like, we feel certain about those situations. Then come Sunday, you get maybe some secondary ones, right? If like Mike Williams was out or something like that out of nowhere, people would definitely make some pivots and stuff. But like when you get a Josh Palmer or a Gerald Everett situation, the ownership is not really going to change too much. People are kind of locked into what they're doing and locked into to the best plays and all of that. And monitoring the Josh Palmers and the Gerald Everetts and obviously Keenan Allen can turn this from a already condensed target tree, like you mentioned, to like, do we just need to freaking play Mike Williams? You know, is Mike Williams like all of a sudden, and Eckler 100% and Eckler. And then you have, like we talked about last week in this game. And, we can touch on briefly on the Brown side, right? If you do think they're going to establish it with Chubb, nobody's going to play Nick Chubb again. We talked about Hunt last week. You can kind of always sprinkle some Hunt in, and then they have two guys, right? Basically two dudes in the passing game, Amari Cooper and David Njoku, that's condensed on their side too. And so I do think this game is pretty appealing for tournaments. It's just definitely something you're going to kind of have to monitor a little bit more than some of the other games.
Right. And then obviously the ultimate indicator of whether a fantasy game will explode, or whether a football game will explode for fantasy purposes, is what did these two teams do when they met up last year? And in case anyone forgot, the Chargers and the Browns had an absolute shootout last year where this was the game where Brandon Staley earned his reputation for going for all those fourth downs. Baker Mayfield kept his foot on the gas. So if it worked for us last week, I'm just saying we have to put it out into the universe that these two teams went absolutely nuclear last year when they played each other. I think the final score, did both teams had 40?
I believe so. Yes. That I'm pretty sure that game
42-47.
Good Lord. I'm not saying that people were chasing because of that, but there were multiple other times where people were like, Browns games got kind of popular, but I understand why. You had obviously the good run game, but then you had at times either really condensed target trees to the Jarvis Landry's or Odell for a small stretch or whatever. And the Browns secondary, the Browns defense is kind of the same situation this year. Up front, when healthy, really good, vulnerable on the back end, which leads to potentially some big time DFS games. And I think that Chargers game, the Chargers defense was so bad that the Browns became like, everybody thought like, oh my God, the Browns can have these huge games moving forward the rest of the year. And it was like, no, it was literally the Chargers. It was, right, no. It was just the Chargers. I have that fear about couple of other teams. Go ahead.
And I think the Chargers defense has been one of the most improved units over the course of the offseason. Oh, yeah. But the dangerous thing here is like Bosa's still out, right? Like they have like two cornerbacks questionable. Mm-hmm. So like maybe we do see that terrible version of the Chargers defense again. But I think that obviously like I'm not legitimately endorsing only looking at last year's results for your DFS strategy, just in case anyone out there is taking me literally. But yeah, I think that, like you said, Kareem Hunt, I still think he's a great play because he's getting the same usage every week. And it's just been some weeks he's going to get the touchdowns. And we haven't seen it in weeks 2 through 4. We saw it in week 1. And it's very plausible any given week. I think on FanDuel, he's still like $3,000 cheaper than Nick Chubb, which is pretty insane to me. But yeah, overall, the Chargers run defense wasn't good last year, still not looking particularly good this year. So the Browns could very easily establish it with Chubb and Hunt and then find their spots to let Brissett pick apart the Chargers secondary. So I think this game definitely has the potential to be like, you know, sneaky nuclear, just like last year, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It is funny. We were talking about that before the show, and I've considered just pivoting to the tout that just says, let's play the games that blew up last year after going on. I don't know how many shows it was. I do several every single week, and talking about TJ Hawkinson in a very negative light, literally every single show. And then him specifically being the one guy you need to win tournaments. We'll put your tail between your legs. But as we move on to kind of another game here, maybe probably the most popular quarterback of the slate. Interesting kind of nuances to this game as well. But we have Bucks at the Falcons. Bucks are actually favored by 10, and that might grow. Kyle yep. Pitts is out. So the Falcons, who want to establish it, now have even one less weapon when the Bucks make them not establish it. And the Falcons kind of look to be trending. I know that they've pulled out some wins and had some good games, but just without Kyle Pitts and kind of how they're winning some of these games, it seems a little smoke and mirrors to me. And then you get the Bucks kind of getting healthy, right? Getting healthy-ish, but getting the mm-hmm. receivers back. Offensive line still a little bit shaky, but throwing the ball a ton. They look a lot more like last year's Bucks to me. And I mean, the spread is double digits, so everybody is clearly worried about the Falcons. But I'm pretty worried about the Falcons' ability to put up too much of a fight here. But they have some, I don't want to say easy bring backs, but like, yeah, I mean, if this game's going to remain competitive, there's particularly one guy on the Falcon side when we're doing a game stack show that makes it pretty straightforward to kind of run back any Brady stacks with. But where are you starting with on Bucks and Falcons? And I'll pull up the there we go. Thanks, Steve.
Yep. I think, like you said, it's Drake London all the way for your run back, like especially with Kyle Pitts ruled out. Drake London's already been commanding 30%+ target share as a rookie, which is pretty insane. Where is he? There we go. So we'll start with Tom Brady here. And what other player would you say we should lock in from? I was looking for his face and I forgot that we have him as a little goat.
This is not who I want to start with, but I do think this Greg's question about Kate Otten, because Cam Brate just got ruled out today. Mm-hmm. Speaks to how this game is kind of tricky on the Bucs side, right? At least on the Falcon side, like you said, you can go in and just kind of, let's just pick Drake London, because honestly, if anybody's going to blow up the slate from the Falcons, it pretty much has to be Drake London. But on the Bucs side, Godwin back. Julio's questionable now, so who knows what's going on with him. They do technically have, punt tight ends available. You do have Fournette, and Brady is basically free on mm-hmm. DraftKings at $6,000. I'm interested to see kind of what spits out to us here with the Bucks, because I think picking your brain, would Godwin or Evans would be kind of the primary to me, but I don't have a really strong preference.
Yeah, I think that Godwin, like, he got 10 targets last week in his first week back. I mean, that was not something I think I expected to see, where they, in week one, they put him back out there. He hurts his hamstring, and you kind of would have thought that they'd ease him back in mm-hmm. the second time around, but they just went, nah, dude, go ahead. Like, you're good. So I think that what we could do here is say, like, tell the optimizer to give us at least two Buccaneers with Brady, but not say specifically who.
Mm-hmm.
And then pick someone from one of the other games that we like. Say maybe let's lock in Mike Williams in this lineup, just because we just talked about nice situation that he's in. So we can see what comes up here. Keep a tight end out of the flex, especially this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please, no tight end flex. I don't want to play any of them, so please, God, don't get me two of them in the same lineup. All right,
so let's see.
Oh, interesting. It does have Lenny. It does. It it uses Lenny as the second Buck. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
To me,
I think that probably not a lot of people are going to play Brady with Lenny. So even though their projected ownership, which is now in, you know, the lineups here on the right, even though their projected ownerships are probably pretty high, I'd be surprised to see a lot of Brady with Lenny, right? Because I don't think that, like, we know that Fournette's going to catch passes and he gets targets from Brady, but you kind of, in the way that you play out this game in your head, you think, oh, either Brady's just going to air it out and it's going to be a big game for Evans and Godwin, or the Bucs are going to grind it out on the ground and it's just going to be a big Fournette game. But I think that all you need is Brady to throw one touchdown to Fournette. Maybe Fournette runs in a second one and they could easily both get there. And I think that's actually pretty unique combination. I don't mind it.
And then, just to touch really quickly before we kind of finish the lineup, Marie says Rashad White is 5,100 on DraftKings. I have two thoughts / comments about Rashad White. One is I wouldn't read too much into, like, specifically the result of Rashad White last week. You know, he did get in the box. He did catch a couple balls or whatever. That game was pretty much over at the end. And so the, like, specific box score result that you got from Rashad White, I think I would throw out. What I wouldn't throw out, and, like, the exact amount of snaps that he played. He got up to, I'm looking at it right now, he played 24 snaps for 38% of the Bucs' offensive snaps. So he's, in my opinion, going to, like, spell Lenny. I think we even might have talked about this last week or at some point. Lenny came out and said, or there was a quote that basically he told the young backs that, like, you guys, I can't play every single snap. I'm getting older. I would like to, you know, continue making millions of dollars playing football. I can't play 100% of snaps every single game for the rest of my career. So you guys got to basically step up. And so what they did was, it was almost like the Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison type split, where Lenny is still playing every single phase of the game and every snap when he's out there. But then Rashad White would, like, give him a series off. You know, he comes in for the third series or whatever, and Lenny just gets that whole time off. And the Vikings like to do that with Madison, or at least used to, with Madison and Dalvin. And so I think if this game kind of isn't competitive, you might see a little bit more Rashad White, right? But if this game is competitive and it's blowing up, and certainly for the first, like, half and three quarters, Lenny's going to get his, you know, he's going to have his 70% snap share or whatever, and he's going to get his. And so I wouldn't be doing anything with Rashad White yet, is basically what I'm saying. But maybe in the future, if Lenny does miss a game, it's definitely going to be wheels up for White then.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I think that that's a good point. And then last week, I'm pretty sure that Leonard Fournette was still questionable going into the game. Like, he's been on and off the injury report in that game where they were completely out of it against the Chiefs. It doesn't surprise me that Rashad White got that usage, but I think that his salary jumped accordingly because he did find the end zone. So it's kind of like, if he were still a sneaky play, like he's been in weeks past, sure, but the salary, you know, builders in the, you know, in their evil lair are like kind of caught on to Rashad White getting, because at the end of the day, like you said, he had basically Tony Pollard-esque usage last game, but I think that we need to see, you know, one or two more weeks of that to say that that's like a trend and not an anomaly due to that game script and Lenny's lingering injuries.
Yep. So anyway, back to here. What are your first kind of initial thoughts on this outside of having Lenny with Brady? I don't know that I love playing Lenny with Brady, but look at last week. You just play all the Seahawks and Lions, and it kind of, like, doesn't matter when you hit the right game, or not even the right game, the right offense, right? The offense that scores 40-something points, you know, you kind of don't care where it comes from, and it's probably going to come from Brady's arm or Lenny's legs. So I do think it's maybe somewhat interesting, but what other kind of initial thoughts on this team?
I think that, I mean, Christian Kirk is someone that I've been a huge fan of playing this year so far, 6,600, solid price there. And then Dalton Schultz kind of scares me. I mean, he's coming off that PCL injury still, but if you look at the other tight ends that he's been priced down to, it's kind of like, yeah, sure, we can take that shot. Like, would you rather spend $3,500 on Mike Gesicki? Like, no, thank you. So I think that for Dalton Schultz's, like, volume upside, not saying he's like a, you know, he doesn't have upside in the same way that David Njoku or Dallas Goedert does, but Dalton Schultz definitely will get games with 7, 8, 9 targets, and you're not seeing many guys with that ability in this price range. So I can see why the optimizer came around and liked him. And then I think that Jeff Wilson is in a really good spot too. I mean, I definitely expected to see a little bit more of Jordan Mason or Marlon Mack in these games since TDP got hurt, but they've been just completely making Jeff Wilson a bell cow, and the 49ers should be absolutely dominant in this game. So I think that this is a pretty good spot for Jeff Wilson. I would say I like this lineup. We're ownership's not too bad. And then the Seahawks defense, I think, is in a good spot here too, where they're just like, I don't know. It's Andy Dalton. I don't know why the Saints are favored by 5.5. And if, you know, if Jameis somehow comes around and plays, he's questionable now, but trending towards not playing since I don't think he practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Jameis does play, then you're even more excited about the Seahawks defense. So I think it's kind of a win-win there.
And what I really like about that, can you go back just really quickly?
Yeah.
What I really like about this, this type of a team is, you're mixing in, I like that you put Mike Williams in there, and it just so happened to work out this way, but you get your core stack, right? So we get the Bucs right, and then there's only that one alpha play, target dominant wide receiver on the other side. So it's like, if you're right about the Bucs stack, I'm not saying London is a lock to get there, but he's going to have every opportunity to, you're not going to, you know, if you hit on the Bucs, you're going to be feeling good about London, whether he gets there or not. Then two wide receivers who we like the spots, we like the volume upside, we like the general fantasy upside, right? Alpha wide receivers, Christian Kirk and Mike Williams. And then you mentioned Jeff Wilson is kind of an alpha running back. He's not priced as such, and the name probably doesn't make sense, but he handled, Debo had 2 carries last week and Jeff Wilson had 18. And like you said, Jordan Mason, no one else, Marlon Mack, none of those guys got involved in the run game. And they actually didn't, I know they won the game really handily. They didn't run very many plays. They didn't even run, I don't believe, 50 plays in, in that game. The typical Jimmy G type offense.
Yeah.
One big play to Debo and a bunch of useless, and one big Jeff Wilson run and
right,
a bunch
and a
of
touchdown
nonsense
from the defense. That's like the yeah. most typical Jimmy G win you can get. I think I saw someone say that on Twitter.
But so, but Jeff Wilson gets 18 carries out of their like 48 plays, you know, and nobody else in the backfield's touching it. And I mean, it's the Panthers. I kind of respect the Panthers defense, like from a macro perspective, but from a game environment perspective, I mean, they should just be. I just don't see how Baker can do anything against this defense. So I really like kind of how you fit those pieces in around your stack, right? I thought it was a really good way to handle this, that like not every other piece has to perfectly correlate or whatever, but you get that game right, and then you just have all these kind of like, I would call them alphas, right? You're going to get all the volume you possibly want and all the upside you possibly want, and they fit perfect around that stack.
No, yeah, I agree. And then I think that a lot of times, so the way this optimizer works is like it does try to force those like secondary game stacks. But I think that when you do a double stack with your main quarterback, it sort of, it reduces, like it accounts for a certain amount of stackage already, if you will. So it didn't necessarily force another game stack in here. Although I think we could, you know, I think that the Jaguars and Texans game is a very good one to pick some secondary stacks from. Mm-hmm. And I also think that the Saints and Seahawks game is going to be another decent one to pick secondary stacks from, where we can pick up Olave and one of Metcalf and Lockett and then just like jam those two into a lineup together. And if that game hits, they're propelling that lineup even further.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
100%. I'm curious to see what kind of some of these. Yeah, there's my guy there. Zay. Very excited for Zay. He's questionable, but he's been limited at practice. We're hoping that Zay is going to be back. What do you think? Let's. I know we're game stack show and stuff, but fitting in some of these running backs around your game stack, like Marie asked about Mostert. You know, so we talked about Jeff Wilson. We've obviously talked about Lenny. You kind of have some of those chalky-ish running backs in the Damian Pierces of the world around that kind of 6K range. Was there anyone to you that kind of stood out? I do kind of like Mostert, but my general point and slash question is running back actually feels kind of wide open to me this week, maybe for one of the first weeks. It definitely didn't feel wide open to me last week, even though maybe it should have. But it feels kind of wide open to me at running back. And so are you kind of prioritizing you're going to that stack first and then seeing kind of what running back fits, or how are you approaching that generally?
Yeah, I think it's definitely some of that where it's finding out who will fit afterward. I think I already mentioned Miles Sanders kind of when we talked about the Eagles Cardinals game. I know he's getting priced up now a decent bit. I do think that both of the Patriots running backs are really interesting to me this week, because Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson, obviously they're splitting reps pretty evenly, but we know that Ramondre is getting a lion's share of the pass catching workload.
Yeah.
And then they're playing the Lions. Like, did we forget that, Rashad Penny had like 150 yards and 2 scores last week? So I think that either of those guys can be a solid play in a lineup, and I definitely will be trying to get exposure to both of them this week. And I think that, there's a good chance, I would say, that one of them ends up with like multiple touchdowns. What do you think on that?
Yeah, this feels like what we talked about with the Eagles and Cardinals, where because I can't like pick, or because I don't feel comfortable picking between the two of them, just like I don't feel comfortable with the Cardinals, and thus the Eagles become a trickier stack. Because what will happen a lot of the time for me, and I think for I'm human just like everybody else is, and I mostly like hand build just a small amount of teams. I can't decide between Ramondre and Damian Harris, even though I like them both. So when I'm making one team, I'm like, just give me Jeff Wilson, right? I know Jeff Wilson's going to get if the running back score points for the 49ers, it's going to be Jeff Wilson, right? If the running back score points for the Bucks, it's going to be Lenny. Like, so you just move, but those guys get more ownership. Then too.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to change my mindset a little bit and force myself into some of these like Patriots, like you mentioned.
Yeah. And I think it's tricky because Ramondre is like very chalky this week. And then so is Damian Harris on DraftKings. His FanDuel price is kind of ridiculous. So it keeps his ownership a little bit lower there. But yeah. And Jeff Wilson's ownership is also not particularly palatable. So it's kind of like you said, I think this slate is especially tricky because the plays that are good on paper, then you have to like eat this chalk. And what are, in these games that are already so, I guess mid, like if we're gonna use Gen Z language here. it's tough. I think Jamal Williams, obviously in another great spot. I've already talked about how I don't think the Lions should really be underdogs in this game. So yeah, I think Jamal Williams is potentially in another huge, huge spot. He's got 2 touchdowns each of the last 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. So what I am seeing, if you want to flip through maybe a couple more and then we can kind of hit our last couple of games. But what I am seeing, there's Kate Otten.
There's Kate Otten.
There. There's Kate Otten. That's he's in. So the second to last column, can you scroll up just a smidge?
Yeah.
Just so that's projected ownership is what the ownership is, right? And then exposure is how many out of these lineups these that you've built. That this,
yep.
So you built 25 teams, and obviously it has 100% Brady, and we forced 100% Mike Williams and London, right? So it's good. Those three are going to be 100. And then when we fit around those guys, it's telling us how much of that. And so it's actually bringing back a ton of Kate Otten, right? 52%.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. And shout out to whoever that was in the chat that called Kate Otten season. But that's kind of one of the macro things I did kind of want to bring up. And interestingly, on maybe the top stack, I don't know that people are going to go to Kate Otten, and tight end is so bad. If you can include the tight end in your stack, right? I know this has Lenny and Kate Otten. I don't know that I love the running back and the tight end, but including the tight end in your stack can like be the way to kind of, you know, cheat your way through the tight end position. You know what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's interesting.
And Otten's a total punt tight end, right? He's 2,500 min price, like, you know, kind of kill two birds with one stone, get him in your stack and pay as little as possible on this terrible slate for tight ends. If he gets lucky and finds the end zone, like, you're well on your way to cashing in your lineups. I like that it found Jalen Waddle. I think that he and Tyreek Hill are still both going to see monster targets. We know that Teddy Bridgewater is fairly accurate, so I think that that's a good spot for him this week against the Jets. I mean, I like all the pieces in this lineup. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad the same thing with you with Waddle. And then Waddle and Tyreek both, I think, a little banged up. That game's not very exciting. You kind of see this all the time, right? It's like, because we don't want to stack that game. I mean, I don't say we. I mean, like, generally as a community, nobody the Teddy Bridgewater, Zach Wilson game is not particularly exciting to everybody, and the total's low, blah, blah, blah. That the Waddles and Tyreek's and such of the world, the Garrett Wilsons and Elijah Moores and Breece Halls and everything, their ownership falls too, because they don't project necessarily better than anybody, and they're not in a game that's necessarily better. But Waddle versus whatever Godwin or something is really not that different, you know, generally speaking. And so yeah, he was interesting to see in here. The Kate Otten thing has me shook a little. 50% Kate Otten, but I think it's a pretty, I'm glad it spotlighted a couple of those things.
Yeah, and then I think that we can, let's just take out Lenny for the sake of seeing what other stacks it puts together, and then I just want to see what happens if we up the correlation a little bit, and then we can run this again. And then for everyone at home who's wondering, like, oh, where can I get this tool? What is this? What I'm looking at? So this is our player profiler custom GPP lineup genius. It's part of our DFS Dominator package, which you'll see here includes these five tools. It's only $45 for just the DFS Dominator package. And then currently we have a deal to get $50 off the all-in package, which is normally $135. You can get it for $85 through the rest of the month of October. So if you go to playerprofiler.com, you know, subscribe, you can use all these tools, build your correlated lineups, and then, you know, build lineups like these with, you know, Brady, Godwin, Evans, Drake London coming back off of it. What do we see here, Eric?
Tony Pollard is kind of shocking. If you put like a Patriots running back in there, I kind of think that would be like super, super fascinating. I don't even necessarily hate Herbert, but there's some, you know, the Harris and Ramondres, I think, for me, probably. Yeah, we'll pivot, maybe.
Mind pivoting that to Harris.
You can, and then, you know, you have the Seahawks, just to hit on Cody asked a question that happens to kind of come up here. With just the tight end and the defense landscape, he's like, how do you feel about, you know, kind of punting at both positions? And I would say I love that punting. You know, this team has Higbee, but you saw like the Otten team before punting down to that $2,500 to $3,000 tight end, and then punting down at defense, where again, I don't really think that there's necessarily anybody that's that much better at defense. We have the Cowboys projected as one of the highest owned, and they're also $2,500 like the Seahawks, but I do really like them. I mean, the pressure that they're getting for $2,500 is really nice, like you said, but you have other teams down here with good matchups that are you know, either good matchups or they're good defenses for cheap. So totally like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as punts go, like, yeah, I don't, the Cowboys being 2,500 on DraftKings feels like a misprice. Like,
mm-hmm.
Micah Parsons, and we saw, you know, I guess it's another case of the Monday night game happening after the prices are set, and I bet that they would be higher if we had, you know, if they had the 7-sack game for Stafford going into their algorithms, but they didn't. So that's like, they're chalky because of that. And I think the Seahawks against the Saints, like I've already said, are in a good spot. And then, like, so we have $300 here. If there was one spot in this lineup we wanted to improve, like maybe Tyler Higbee, nah, nothing there.
And I mean, definitely okay leaving
yeah.
$300. The Pollard thing was just surprising me. He is we're getting like 10 million questionables. I don't think any of these are real questionables, but Tyreek is questionable. Pollard is questionable. Teron Armstead is questionable. Xavier Howard is questionable. So yes. Kamara is questionable. CD is questionable. So lots of questionables. Like I said, I don't think that, I think most of those are more probable than questionable, but
yeah,
lots to monitor this week for sure. Lots to monitor.
Definitely. You just flip through a couple more of these.
We got
McCaffrey and Mostert paired up here.
I don't think I can do CMC, but I can see why it's doing that when you look at the team, right? If you get the double stack, Kate Otten and Mike Evans with the Drake London bring back, we have Mike Williams there, who's a great play and not cheap. You have Mostert makes sense to me. Jeff Wilson makes sense to me. It's like, well, dummy, you got a lot of money left. So
yeah.
There's this guy who's pretty good at running back. You
know? And I think even though he's had kind of a less than what we expected year, and certainly not keeping pace with his like legendary games and seasons of the past, like Christian McCaffrey is still getting a crazy receiving workload. I think that he's still someone who, especially on DraftKings where it's full PPR, is going to help you go a long way. And I mean, how often do we see Christian McCaffrey at only 5% ownership? So
crazy.
Maybe not the worst idea there. I mean, the Niners defense, of course, is pretty
tough.
Pretty scary task, but I think, like you said, that it's exactly why the optimizer finds things like that we might be scared to think of on our own.
There's some Jets. There's some Jets love.
Mm-hmm.
Little Breece, Conklin. Breece is interesting as well. Another guy I kind of like that it spotlighted, similar to Waddle, where kind of just getting like a really good football player getting a nice workload. I know he's, you know, not a total workhorse, but he's taking over more of that backfield as kind of these weeks are going on. I don't really know whether Zach Wilson is good or bad for him. I mean, well, I guess we'll see over time, but at a minimum, it has to give the offense at least a little more upside, I would think, with mm-hmm. Zach Wilson. And just, he's just, again, kind of falling through the cracks. Like people are mentioning Mostert, and I like Mostert just fine too, but Mostert's, it's a $400 difference. What's the difference, really? It's nothing. But people are going to flock to Mostert because they just perceive the situation to be a little bit better. Whereas Breece could get like 22 to 25 touches here, and I don't think anybody would really be very surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of out of the blue when last week we saw him actually take over the backfield. I mean, I'm looking at his, you know, player page right now on Player Profiler, and his snap shares went from 44%, 27%, 50%. Up to 64%, and he's seen, you know, more than 5 targets in 3 of his 4 games, more than 10 targets in 2 of his 4 games. Then again, Joe Flacco is gone now, but he still had 6 targets last week in Zach Wilson's 2022 debut. I think that, you know, he's another guy in that price range, very chalky and very high upside at a friendly price. So I think that, like, definitely someone looking to get exposure to. This week, got a Miles Sanders lineup in here with AJ nice. Brown. I like this a lot.
It's an interesting way, not even just necessarily Miles Sanders, but that approach of the kind of couple Eagles. We haven't gotten to this totally in any of our shows yet, but this week it does feel kind of applicable where we don't necessarily want to go up and get Hurts or Josh Allen or something like that mm-hmm. at their price, but kind of still building in that stack or even a game stack, right? Brady's so cheap that it doesn't really make sense, but maybe like old school Brady, you could have done this. Like when Brady was 7,500, be like, well, I can play Trevor Lawrence. Let's just say Trevor Lawrence. I can mm-hmm. use Trevor Lawrence at 5,600, save 2,000, still get Brady's weapons and get another game stack of like the Jags Texans this week.
Yep.
You know, we don't Brady's himself 6,000. So that is silly, but like with, you could do it with Hurts or with Josh Allen. It's like, yeah, just give me the Eagles weapons and I don't need to go get Hurts. Just please God, don't drop 45 on my head or something like that. And you kind of build in like two game stacks into one lineup.
Totally. Yeah. I think that, I mean, that's, you know, it's a little riskier there to do it with a guy like Hurts or Josh Allen than it is with mm-hmm. Brady, who's like not going to get any rushing production whatsoever. Whereas Hurts or Josh Allen could easily bury you with 15 points on the ground.
Yep.
But I like the, you know, I think getting unique with your stacking like this. I mean, look at this. We got Eckler and Mike Williams in a lineup together, which we talked about the potential for huge target concentration there. They're both extremely low ownership for some reason. And
man, that is crazy.
Garrett Wilson, you know, we talked about the Dolphins receivers, but I think Garrett Wilson in this game is also pretty wheels up for me. So this is like a good way, a lot of really good pivots here to like fit around this very chalky Brady Godwin stack.
This is really nice. Yeah, I like seeing, like you said, because it's doing that process of making your lineups unique. It, you know, it's doing it for you. You don't have, we don't have to think through like, okay, I'm playing this chalky Brady Godwin, you know, with London stack or whatever. How do I like, who can I play? Who can I not play? And you don't have to like necessarily just take every single one of these teams at face value. Right. But you're seeing as we click through these things, I'm like, okay, oh, Garrett Wilson. Yeah, I can put Garrett Wilson in there. I can put Mike Williams in there. I can play Miles Sanders. You know, I can play Breece. I can play Waddle. And like, you just get all these ideas that like, I, you know, Dario and I could talk for 5 hours and we're not going to be able to figure every single one of these out. And it's doing it for us, you know, in the blink of an eye. I love scrolling through them.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's definitely addicting.
Kamara
is an interesting spot, I think. You know, they're saying he's going to be back to full health this week. I don't know how much I buy that, but yeah, he's still Alvin Kamara last time I checked. I think I saw someone on Twitter saying that this is the cheapest he's been on DraftKings since week 9 of his rookie year, which is crazy. So
yeah, against the worst defense in the NFL.
Yep. Second worst. I mean, there's the Lions that are out there.
Yeah. Right? The two teams that I faded in tournaments last week. Yeah. That scored a million points. Again, Milt Williams, Christian Kirk. I like Damian Pierce. We didn't talk Zeke. Zeke is actually kind of interesting, but Damian Pierce being kind of another one of the like chalky-ish running back pieces. But again, you see the builder is creating a lineup where it's like, look, you can still play Brady, right? The Brady Evans London stack, and you can play Damian Pierce because we're going to give you Kate Otten and we're going to give you Zeke and we're going to give you Mike Williams, and like you still build a really good tournament team around kind of some of the more popular pieces.
Totally. Yeah, I think is there any last combinations you want to try, and then we can wrap up the show with some quick hits on the other two games we want to talk about today?
I don't have any, I don't think. The only thing that I was going to kind of ask you was, do you think there's scenarios in which, you know, Julio is questionable, where we extend to Julio or Russell Gage or anything like that? Or do you think it's going to largely just totally be the Evans, Godwin, and maybe Kate Otten and Lenny, right? We have a lot of bucks out there, but yeah. Like if Julio plays, is he in the player pool or anything like that?
I think that, I mean, Julio has been looking kind of dusty these last, I think he's played what he played in, yeah, he saw the field for the first time since week 1 and he had 2 targets, and Russell Gage had that huge game in week 3. I'm more inclined to play Gage between the two of them, and especially if Julio's out, I think you mix in Gage and make it like a little bit more of a trio of those receivers. But I think that like Tom Brady, it's kind of hard to tell because last week they were really pass heavy out of pure necessity because they were down like, you know, 20 some points. And this week that definitely won't be the case. So it's kind of a, you know, litmus test for whether the Bucs will stay pass heavy when they're ahead. Cause that was something they did last year. And that was the reason they were huge for us and DFS and best ball and everything. like in week one when they beat the Cowboys, they couldn't finish in the end in the red zone. So I think this is kind of another, like I said, it's just a test to see whether the Cowboys will, or sorry, the Bucks will stay pass heavy when they're ahead, because we haven't really had a chance to have that hypothesis tested much yet this year.
That's a really great point. And one where I'm kind of, as well, it leads into kind of two quick games that we'll hit on and then get out of here, is the assumption is it's kind of funny in two ways. The assumption is that the Falcons matchup is so good that it's just, we're right back to last year wheels up on the Bucks. Now, I know the price is very good, right? Tom Brady at 6,000, Godwin at 5,900, et cetera. I get it. But like, for weeks, this was not the same old Bucks. We frankly like weren't even interested in these dudes. Like, they were bad. You know what I mean? And now they're like the highest owned stack. But it's, again, it's a good matchup and pricing, so I get that. But it's kind of funny that is the case. And what you said, they ran the ball six times last week. Six. they threw 52 passes, right? So they were just throwing every down because they were just getting obliterated by the Chiefs. We don't know that that's what's going to happen this week. Maybe right. It is, but the field is very sure that we're still going to get this crazy pass rate out of the Bucks. It does make me a little bit more interested in Lenny, because I think he can get there in both ways. If they keep passing, he can just smash from catching passes. We've seen it all the time. If they do maybe take the foot off the gas a little bit, yeah, there's Rashad White concerns, but I mean, maybe that's like a fourth quarter concern. And if Lenny ain't got there by the fourth quarter against the Falcons, he probably ain't getting there anyway. So I just think it's interesting, you know, that the field is we're setting aside all the concerns for Brady and the Bucks because the matchup and everything, the price is right. Whereas a lot of other times we don't do that. You know what I mean? Like we don't just set aside, you know, we're not setting aside the concerns about the Bears and not saying that we should or shouldn't, but we kind of pick and choose when to do that. One team that we talked about last week, I want to hit on this because I do think this game's really interesting for tournaments, is Texans Jaguars, where you do kind of have, I think, Trevor Lawrence as a pivot off of Brady, although he's going to be, I think it's going to be those two guys.
They're the chalk somehow.
Yes, which is hilarious to think about, right? Tom Brady and Trevor Lawrence, but they get the Texans. I do think, though, that if a guy in that range were going to beat Tom Brady, I think Lawrence is probably the most probable guy to do it. And he also has the very clear stacking partners. Zay Jones is questionable, but he's been limited all week. And they're saying that Doug Peterson said he's good to go. Zay's been like sneaky awesome so far this year, both in the box score and on the football field. And Christian Kirk, like you just saw how many lineups he shows up into when we run the optimals, he looks great. And there's some reasonable enough guys, I guess I would say, on the Texans side. So what are your general thoughts on Texans Jaguars kind of as maybe a pivot off the Bucks?
Yeah, I think it's hard to stomach a chalky Trevor Lawrence. Like, I think he's looked better this year, but a lot of his underlying metrics are still not necessarily blowing me away. Like, he's gotten a little bit luckier with touchdown variance. He had a big game against the Chargers, but I think that he's not doing any, like, his QBR is 58.8. Like, that's just above league average. He's number 11 overall. Like, he's not like Tua, where we're seeing like, oh wow, this is a huge leap forward for this guy. It's kind of like, you know, he was just so bad last year that getting to okay is remarkable to us.
Yes.
But
yes.
I think that just makes it really tough for me to want to play him. So I think that this might be a game where I'll just be inserting a lot of Christian Kirk plus Brandon Cooks in a lineup, or Zay Jones plus Brandon Cooks, and just say, look, maybe this game pops off. And even if this game does, like, even if the game doesn't go too big, I think Kirk and Cooks can still both definitely get there because they're the alphas in their respective offenses.
Totally agree. I also think if you do want to, even as a kind of a secondary correlation, or if you want to stack this game, we talked about it's only week four. We shouldn't be talking this much about Josh Reynolds. We should never be mentioning these names ever, but this tight end slate is so gross. The Texans tight end production, like across the board, has been like really good this year. It's just been, we don't really know who it's going to be, right? Mm-hmm. There's been Brevin Jordan. There's been Pharaoh Brown. There's been OJ Howard popping up for two touchdowns. There's been, they brought back Jordan Akins. Now they cut Jordan Akins.
And Pharaoh Brown this week too. Yeah.
And they cut Pharaoh Brown, and Brevin Jordan is questionable. I believe he did not practice again today. So I think it could be OJ Howard time. Yeah. It's 2,600 on DraftKings. And so I think, like, if you're playing Christian Kirk and you're like, I don't want to play Cade Otton or something, and I need a punt tight end, I actually think OJ Howard makes a fair bit of sense. And so I just think there's a lot of ways you can, even if you play Brady, you get the Christian Kirk thing and then use your punt tight end or play Cooks or whatever. I just think that this game is going to have fantasy goodness. I don't know that it's going to be the slate winning game stack, but I definitely feel very confident that it's going to have fantasy goodness. One last game that I'm not as confident is going to have fantasy goodness is Seahawks and the Saints. Looks like Andy Dalton is going to be the starter for the Saints. And we have soon to be Pro Bowler, I guess, Geno Smith on the other side.
MVP
Geno is, but is this kind of where the buck stops though with Seattle? Not necessarily for fantasy that we don't want to play any of these guys, but is this kind of where maybe Seattle slows down a little bit and we want to lean a little more heavily on the Saints side, or how are you feeling about this last game?
I think that, I mean, this Saints defense has been one that has been pretty good since like 2017. They had a bit of a resurgence, right? But they've just been losing piece after piece in free agency because they just can't afford to keep everyone. They drafted so well, they couldn't afford to keep everyone. It happens to any team that drafts well. And they're kind of struggling to generate pressure this year. And Geno Smith has been really good against just like when he's not pressured. So I think that Geno Smith's, for example, his clean pocket completion percentage, I think Matt touched on this last week, is 84%, number one in the league. So if you don't pressure Geno Smith, like, he's going to cook you. And the Saints haven't really been getting that much pressure this year. So I'm actually kind of inclined to play the Seahawks. I think that, like I touched on this maybe a few minutes ago, is like a skinny stack with Olave and Metcalf, or Olave and Lockett is really appealing to me, kind of the same way I just touched on maybe Kirk and Cooks from that Jaguars Texans game. Yep. I think that, like, yeah, you, I mean, maybe this is the week to like just go, you know, big dick energy and play Geno again, and maybe he gets you there. But I think that, like, this is a great game for some just more skinny stacking. I'm still worried about Alvin Kamara, and it's like you don't want to really touch any of the tight ends on either of these offenses. So it's kind of just like a Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and Chris Olave game for me. And I think that the over-under is 46.5. Like, there should be enough offense here for something, you know, to happen for these receivers.
Yeah, definitely. Cody is definitely in on Olave, in case anyone couldn't tell. I definitely like Olave. The only concern for Olave is projected ownership. He's projected to be our highest owned wide receiver on the slate. And I don't have a negative thing to say. Michael Thomas is out. Chris Olave's target earning ability has been like so head and shoulders above what I thought it was going to be in the NFL. I knew he was a good football player. I thought he'd be an awesome, like, role player, right? Like, I hate that people say this all the time, like, oh, he's the DeSean Jackson. I don't mean it like that, but I mean in terms of how impactful and of like a role player you could be, right? DeSean Jackson's not Davante Adams, right? But he's a really impactful football player. I kind of thought about Chris Olave in that way, right? Give me my 6 to 7 down the field targets every single week, just do the little things and help my offense. I did not expect gonna be, you know, lapping the entire NFL in air yards and averaging double digit targets, but the field is on that with Olave, right? And so I wouldn't you know, fade him in 150 teams, but I'd be smart about how I play my Chris Olave. I agree, I don't think I can do it with Kamara, but it's kind of the same sentiment like we talked about with the Bucks thing. Everybody is like, we're back on the Bucks. What happened before with the Bucks doesn't matter. And I get it. I agree. I don't have any issue with anybody on the Bucks this week, right? I think it makes sense. But everybody has that same feeling. And the Falcons haven't went out there and just gotten torched all year. I know that their defense is not great, but they're not out there being the Seahawks defense or the Lions defense. You know what I mean? They're 2-2. They're winning.
They should have beaten the Saints in week one. They'd be atop the division right now.
They had the ball. They marched down the field against the Rams as well, and could have won that. They could literally be 4-0. We're sitting here talking about how bad they
4-0
are.
4-0 Falcons.
They could be 4-0. And so all I'm saying is that you mentioned the Geno thing, and then I was bringing up Kamara both as like the counterpoints to that. Geno is balling out of control. And now you can say it's matchup, whatever, but you still have to make the throws. You still have to play. Not everybody crushes in every good matchup, right? Bailey Zappi's playing the Lions this week. He ain't going to do what Geno did. Go ahead and spoiler alert. It's not, that one's not going to happen. You still have to perform. And so, but nobody's going to play right now. This week it's Brady and Lawrence, and maybe we'll pay up. We're done with Geno. Mm-hmm. It's over, right? Why can't Geno just go do it again and go get 25 fantasy points or whatever here? I think it's reasonable. I don't think the Saints, like you said, are as good as they historically have been. I kind of think, again, just like the Bucks thing, my expectation is like the, no pun intended, the buck stops here with the Seahawks, and we don't kind of see that explosion. But everybody thinks that. If everybody thinks that, like the Geno to Metcalf with the Olave bring back is like, looks a lot more appealing in tournaments. And Alvin Kamara looks more appealing in tournaments. If the Seahawks are going to go score some points and maybe we get a little more receiving from Kamara with Dalton, right? I just think this game is one that at face value, you're kind of like, ugh, you know, I don't really like it. But everybody thinks that, and everybody's going to go to the other games. So I'm glad we touched on this one because it's fascinating for tournaments. Next week, we're going to have a conversation about like, yep, we knew it. You know, that Geno was a fraud, or holy shit, Geno is actually really, really good. You know?
Yeah. No, this is a very like beggars can't be choosers slate. Like, do we just have a lot of gross games, a lot of gross options to choose from across the slate? So we just kind of like, you know, like we said on the top of this show, like we got to dig deep, and like there's nothing. There's not really many freebies on this slate. Like, it's kind of a lot of, you know, just guess and check and see what happens. And then,
I mean, it's one of these games you feel uncomfortable with that's going to blow up. I have no idea which one it's going to be. Probably not the one that I pick or we pick or whatever, right? One of these games is going to blow up. Seattle, Houston, obviously, you know, Tampa Bay could come out and drop a 40 spot here on Atlanta or whatever, but it's generally not the one. I know that there's not necessarily math to back this up, but when everybody thinks the same things, it's generally not the ones that we all kind of expect to happen, right? We expect the Bills to go score 40 every week, and they haven't been doing it. Not even close, actually. You know, we expect all these things to constantly happen, and they most of the time they don't. So, like I said, I liked the Seahawks game being on there, and some of these games that are maybe look a little grosser at face value, but because of this slate, the opportunity cost is pretty low, right? The opportunity cost is like, okay, I didn't stack the Eagles, but they're super expensive. Like outside of that, it's like, there's not really much opportunity cost. There's no opportunity cost at tight end. And so then it's kind of, what games are you stacking? And I think, you know, if you want to eat some running back chalk or whatever, but in general, I think this week, like, just kind of being contrarian, is it like, you saw Mike Williams at 1% with no Keenan Allen against the Browns? Like, come on, dude. Like, you know, you don't have to play Mike Evans. Play Mike Williams, play Christian Kirk, right? I love Olave, but play Christian Kirk. You know, like you can make pivots that are great plays that are contrarian this week. That's kind of what I've learned in the last hour talking to you. It's really started to kind of feel more true to me.
Well, and you know, I think we talk about expected value, right? And it's like, if you follow the chalk and the chalk does hit, you're never going to win as big as if you go contrarian and that hits. Like, it just, you know, by the laws of probability, right? Like, if we're on this Bucks game and everyone else is, and it does go nuts, like, sure, you'll do well, but if you're on the Seahawks Saints game and that hits, or if you pick the right Texan and Jaguar as your secondary stack, like, that's where you build lineups that are going to win in like every contest that you enter them. So that's what we're trying to do too.
100%, 100%. So I do want to hit just a couple of the people's Fail Mary asking a Kamara ownership. I think I think people will still be pretty scared off by him. I'm not going to put an exact number on it, but I wouldn't be worried about his ownership in tournaments, because I think the general sentiment is just like, what can you even project him for? I mean, he's questionable, mm-hmm. first of all, still. What can you even project him for touch-wise? So I don't think he's going to be super owned. And Aaron also asks, are you going over under on Kamara's ownership? And then, yeah, more Kamara. Perfect spot for him to break out. I agree. It's just, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around that. And I do think there's a good clip of opportunity cost at running back. All right. Last thing mm-hmm. before we get out of here, what's the I try to wrap with the, what's the hot take? What's the tournament winning stack, game stack, since this is a game stack show? You got to put your feet to the fire. I got to put your feet to the fire. Which game do you have to stack? What's the Lions Seahawks game of this week? Or the last yep. year's Browns Chargers.
I was about to say Browns Chargers. I think you stack. I think you stack Herbert. Like, you know, the potential, the just pure upside of a Herbert, Eckler, Mike Williams stack with like Kareem Hunt on the other side of it in a bad game script for the Browns is just absolutely slate breaking and very low owned this week. So I think that's my call. And I feel more confident about that call than most weeks where it's like, oh, there's so many good choices. How do I pick it? This week is kind of like, oh, I guess it's this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Which is funny, but I think I wouldn't have said that stack coming into this. And I promise it's not just because the game went nuts last year, but I do think the more we talked it through, like for sure, Herbert, Mike Williams with one of these Browns bring backs. I think there's basically four guys on the Brown side. I like the fact that there's running backs you can use, expensive wide receivers, a little bit cheaper wide receivers, pending Josh Palmer's health or whatever. There's, you know, Njoku, we saw Njoku, and we're done with Njoku, right? We spent a bunch of time last week talking mm-hmm. about Njoku, and now I'm looking at ownership, yeah. and, you know, he is 6% or whatever at 3,800, and it makes for a great bring back to me. I just think that the options are so, so, so nice in this game that I'm pretty in on it now as agreeing with you as the slate breaker.
Totally. I mean, everything we said about Njoku last week at 3,700 still applies for him at 3,800, and the field is completely off of it.
Yeah, we're gonna play Zach Ertz and Tyler Higbee, and we can't play David Njoku in tournaments. It's funny, but thanks for hanging out with us, guys. Appreciate you. Had a ton of fun. It's probably because Matt wasn't here. We got to talk about what we wanted to talk about. Kidding, obviously. We love you, Matt. Matt will be back next week, as well. Of course, myself and Dario. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate all the comments and the conversation. And we will see you guys next week.
Thanks, Eric.